Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 10, chapter, we're starting a new chapter, chapter 35, and the title of the chapter is The Gopis Sing of Krishna as He Wanders in the Forest. So he's in the stage of herding either the it's still the calves, because the Brahma Vimohan Leela hasn't happened yet. No, it has happened. So this is cows. Chapter summary. This chapter contains the songs of the gopis as they sing to express their feelings of separation from Krishna when he goes to the forest during the day. Paragraph. As the gopis' mood of separation from Sri Krishna becomes even more intense, his names, forms, qualities, and pastimes begin spontaneously manifesting in their hearts. Thus, they join together and sing as follows. Quote, the beauty of Krishna attracts the minds of all. When he stands in his threefold bending way and plays upon his flute, the Siddha's wives flying in the sky with their husbands become attracted to him and forget external reality. The bulls, cows, and other animals in the pasture become stunned in ecstasy, and they stand so still, with the grass unchewed between their teeth. Nobody sees that, except here. That they appear like figures in a drawing. Indeed, even the unconscious rivers stop flowing. Just see. When Krishna dresses himself in forest array and calls the cows' names by blowing on his flute, even the trees and creepers become so ecstatic out of love that their limbs display eruptions and their sap pours down like torrents of tears. The sound of Krishna's flute causes the cranes, swans, and other birds in the lakes to close their eyes in deep meditation. The clouds in the sky to gently rumble, imitating the flute's vibration. And even such great authorities in the science of music as Indra, Shiva, and Brahma become astonished. And just as we, gopis, are anxious to offer everything we have to Krishna, so the wives of the black deer follow him about, imitating us. When Krishna is returning to Braja, he constantly plays his flute while his young companions chant his glories, and Brahma and other chief demigods come to worship his lotus feet. Thus, the gopis, feeling intense separation from Krishna, sing of his pastimes. So this is long past the, well, not terribly long past. It's comes after the rasa dance. So having experienced Krishna's association in that way, now it's feeling Krishna's separation in this way. And we'll hear more about it. text 1, chapter 35. Shukadeva Goswami said, whenever Krishna went to the forest, the minds of the gopis would run after him, and thus the young girls sadly spent their days singing of his pastimes. Purport. Although the gopis enjoyed direct association with Krishna at night in the rasa dance, during the day he went about his normal duties, tending his cows in the forest. At that time, the minds of the gopis would run after him, but the young girls had to stay back in the village and do their own duties. Thus, feeling the pain of separation, they would sing about Sri Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, in the 35th chapter, the gopis, pining in separation from Krishna, spend their days relishing him through reciting 12 pairs of verses. Emphasis is on, because the way the chapter is constructed, it's in pairs. You'll see. Prema, in order to nourish itself, divided itself into two parts. The coolness of enjoyment in the moonlight and the heat of separation in the daylight. Paragraph. The gopis spent their nights, as previously described, directly associating with Krishna, singing and dancing, conversing, absorbed in the conjugal rasa that has been described. In the daytime, they could only associate with Krishna by thinking of him, tasting the flute song. They became absorbed in the rasa of separation. Paragraph. When Krishna went to the forest to herd the cows, the gopis' minds followed after him quickly. Jiva Goswami writes, Shukadeva Goswami said, whenever Krishna went to the forest, the minds of the gopis would run after him, and thus the young girls sadly spent their days singing of his pastimes. The gopis, who delighted in Krishna during the night with the rasa pastimes, would be overcome with great sorrow during the day. Parashara says, Parashara Muni, Vishnu Purana, quote, Krishna sported with the gopis in such a way that during the day, a moment felt like millions of years in his absence. Paragraph. How could they tolerate such unhappiness? Paragraph. Describing their separation during the day in order to nourish their enjoyment during the nights, Shukadeva shows how they passed their time. Their minds went quickly with him. Anu Druta Chetasaha. Their hearts melted on thinking of him. Because of absorption in him, they stopped their household duties. All glories to the unprecedented greatness of the gopis. Taking a particle of their support, I will explain their song. And Sanatan Goswami says some similar things, plus. The gopis who delighted in Krishna during the night with the rasa pastimes would be overcome with great sorrow during the day. Paragraph. When Krishna, the most attractive person, he who was filled with the highest bliss, went to the forest of Vrindavan during the day, the gopis could not tolerate the separation. Their hearts quickly pursued him because of the attachment. They sang in a remarkable manner, which attracted the whole universe, predominated with the beguiling sound of the flute about Krishna's forest pastimes. with Krishna dressed in his forest outfit. Because their hearts followed him, they could not do their household chores. They absorbed themselves in his pastimes, since they were none different from him. They passed the remaining time in sorrow, singing. This is confirmed in verse 26. This is just the first verse. Since they passed their time singing, the greatness of singing his pastimes is shown. Paragraph. They passed their days with difficulty, not able to tolerate the separation because they sang about his pastimes. This was because they were gopis, devoted to him alone. All glories to the unprecedented greatness of the gopis. And Jiva Goswami writes in Priti Sandarbha, these verses are written in pairs, yugala. And now we're going to get a preview of the chapter. He goes through a little summary. So this is text one, but we're reading like a sneak preview of what's coming up. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the third verse, the word saha siddhai means the goddess says, and their husbands, the demigods, chanted the glories of Lord Krishna's flute music. And here's the BBT translation. The gopis said, when Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. At that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the siddhas, become amazed. Paragraph. In text 8, in the words Adi Purusha Ivachala Bhuti, the gopis, impelled by love, speculate, quote, perhaps Krishna is the all-powerful and all-opulent supreme personality of Godhead, the greatest of all. This statement is like that of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.29.32. So 10.29.32 is the beginning part of the rasa dance. They're preparing themselves. He has called them by playing upon his flute, and they've come and they're singing, our dear Krishna, as an expert in religion, you have advised us that the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully soothe their husbands, children, and other relatives. We agree that this principle is valid, but actually this service should be rendered to you. After all, O Lord, you are the dearmost friend of all embodied souls. You are their intimate relative, and indeed their very capital S self. So that is, they're addressing Krishna as the Supreme. Although, it's not always like that, but that's what's being described here. This speculation, perhaps Krishna is the all-powerful. That's in chapter 35, similar to chapter 29. In text 9, similarly, in Srimad Bhagavatam, text 9, 10.35.9, quote, perhaps Krishna is Lord Vishnu, who is expanded everywhere. Now this is Jiva Goswami's Priti Sandarbha, and the translation of that verse, text 9. He thus appears just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exhibiting his inexhaustible opulences. When the cows wander onto the mountainsides and Krishna calls out to them with the sound of his flute, The trees and creepers in the forest respond by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. Remember, these are not scholarly personalities, these are village girls, but they have understandings. In text 16, the word vraja bhuvaha indicates the grass and other living entities manifest in the land of Vraja. Here, the words shayaman kura todam means, quote, the touch of Lord Krishna's feet is glorious because that touch relieves the distress of the ground. The newly sprouted grass on the ground suffer when they are trampled by the cow's sets of four hooves. And the translation, PBT translation, text 16. As Krishna strolls through Vraja with his lotus petal-like feet marking the ground with the distinctive emblems of flag, thunderbolt, lotus, and elephant goad, he relieves the distress the ground feels from the cow's hooves. Then we're going to texts 22, 23, again, this is in pairs. Gazing at Lord Krishna in Sambhoga. Now, there's these two terms, Sambhoga and what's the term for separation? Louder? Vipralamba. Sambhoga and Vipralamba. So they're in this mood of separation, Vipralamba. But they're anticipating meeting Sambhoga. Anticipation of enjoyment and meeting. Gazing at Lord Krishna in Sambhoga is seen in these words in Srimad. So he's in the forest. They're not seeing him, but he appears in their hearts. That's what's being said. So the translation of 22:23. Out of great affection for the cows of Vraja, Krishna became the lifter of Govardhan Hill. At the end of the day, having rounded up all his own cows, he plays a song on his flute while exalted demigods standing along the path worship his lotus feet and the cowherd boys accompanying him chant his glories. His garland is powdered by the dust raised by the cow's hooves, and his beauty, enhanced by his fatigue, creates an ecstatic festival for everyone's eyes. Eager to fulfill his friend's desires, Krishna is the moon, arisen from the womb of Mother Yashoda. In this verse, the word Devaki Jatara Bhu indicates a hint at Lord Krishna's name. Now it goes back to the name-giving ceremony, chapter 8. Here we are in 35, but the root of that hint of Krishna's name is also seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.14. Gargamuni says, for many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudev. So the translation, this Prabhupada's translation is Yashoda, that arisen from the womb of Yashoda, but the Sanskrit is Devaki. So listen. In Srimad Bhagavatam, text 10.35.23, the word Devaki should be understood to mean Yashoda. Here's why. Yashoda was also known by the name Devaki. That Lord Krishna's mother sometimes has more than one name is seen in these words in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.10. Chapter 7 of Canto 2 is a summary description of avatars. Like Canto 1, Chapter 3 is a summary of avatars. Canto 2, Chapter 7 is a summary of avatars. And speaking of Rishabhdev, one of the avatars, the verse says, text 10, Nabhir Asau Rishabha Asa Sudevi Sunaha. The Lord appeared as the son of Sudevi, the wife of King Nabhi, and was known as Rishabhdev. In the explanation, in this verse it is seen that Sudevi is another name for Queen Meru Devi. Rishabhdev's wife is Meru Devi, but she's also known as Sudevi. That Devaki is another name of Yashoda is seen in these words in Adi Purana. Specifically, quote, Maharaj Nanda's wife had two names, Yashoda and Devaki. Paragraph. Again, gazing at Lord Krishna in Sambhoga, anticipation of enjoyment and meeting, is also seen in these words. In the next two pair, 24-25, which read, as Krishna respectfully greets his well-wishing friends, his eyes roll slightly as if from intoxication. He wears a flower garland, and the beauty of his soft cheeks is accentuated by the brilliance of his golden earrings and the whiteness of his face, which has the color of Badara berry. Don't know what that is. With his cheerful face resembling the moon, Lord of the night, the Lord of the Yadus moves with the grace of a regal elephant. Thus, he returns in the evening, delivering the cows of Raja from the heat of the day. In the next verse, 20:26, the word Vraja Gavam refers to both the calves and the adult cows, and this is also indicated, that's 24:25, it's also indicated in 26, translation, BBT translation 26. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, oh, king, thus during the daytime the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna, and those ladies' minds and hearts absorbed in him were filled with great festivity. And concluding, here the words Mahodaya Re Mi Re mean, quote, joyful that Lord Krishna's return in the afternoon, they always celebrated a great festival. This verse was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. Of course, he's speaking all of them on behalf of the gopis, quoting the gopis. He's got a recording device and he plays back what the gopis say. He's Chikalagya, like his father, so he knows what they say, even he wasn't there. So that covers five pages, and this chapter has 153 pages. And a whole section here is Gopal Champu. And I think what we'll do at the end is we'll just spend a session reading Gopal Champu, because it's really, we'll have already heard, and then we'll have, even as we're going along, we'll get little sections of, but then Gopal Champu, but reading through, it's especially sweet. We're taking a plunge in through sound in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. It's a nice contrast in the evening. It's his childhood pastimes, and now it's his youthful pastimes. And there's different groups of devotees who he's reciprocating with in his childhood pastimes and in his youthful pastimes. But the principle is the same. They have unalloyed devotion for him. And the adults, the gopas and gopis, they have unalloyed devotion for him, parental affection. And he reciprocates according to their parental affection in different ways, stimulating their love and teaching them lessons and admonishing demons and correcting Indra and Brahma and so forth. And it's a festival. Now, feelings of separation aren't normally thought of as a festival. Feelings of separation is thought of as being something that hurts. But specifically when it comes to Krishna, it may look like it hurts, but it's an ecstasy. It's one of the many mysteries in the science of rasa, and the pastimes, the exchanges of the Supreme Lord with his devotees. So this is chapter 35, which the Rasa Lila section ends with chapter 33. But what we're understanding from this is this is going on. And even in chapter 35, that is, he's stimulating the love of the young gopis by Rasa Lila in the evening and the separation mood at night. Excuse me, separation during the day. Rasa Lila in the evening and separation during the day. But it's then anticipating meeting. And their thoughts are absorbed. It's easy to picture in your mind some of those beautiful paintings where the gopis are going mad, imitating Krishna's pastimes and discussing with one another and singing his glories. And very special love. And as the Acharya says, all glories to the love of the gopis. In the parental affection section, a message that's demonstrated and by Krishna and explained by our acharyas is Krishna wants to show those who have an understanding of his divinity that even greater than his divinity is his quality of being controlled by the love of his devotees. He doesn't lose his divinity when he does that. It just isn't, he isn't acting from that place. And others cannot see him in that way either, even though they're supposing or speculating or whatever. they're not oblivious to his opulences. They're like these, what happens to the different living entities and even inanimate, the river and the rocks and so forth. Hearing of Krishna's flute, it's supernatural. There's potencies in everything. His glance and his walk and his everything. His talking, his singing, his flute playing, his smile, his attire. And these are all according to the teachings of Rupa Goswami. These are stimulations of ecstatic love. Supposing one day we become pure. And when we become pure, just hearing these descriptions of Krishna invoke bhava and prema. And what about the rest of us that's not at that stage yet? It's awakening that attraction. It's like germinating a seed. The seed is not yet a plant bearing flowers and fruits, but there's a process of germinating the seed that comes to that stage. So that's what's happening, the cleansing and the attraction, just by hearing. We have a long way to go, and that's just fine. Let's keep going, however long the path is, the journey to reach that stage of purity. So a goal, a mode of goodness goal, is to become purified. And the benefit of becoming purified is to awaken love, because that's what Krishna is attracted to. Krishna has, we hear, Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate, Namo Brahmanyat Devaya Go Brahmana Hitayacha. Krishna holds the Brahmanas in a very special regard, and that's mode of goodness people. But really, a Brahmana is more than just a mode of goodness person, or, you know, they have intellect, and they can use that intellect to discern things. Brahmanas certainly can do that, but more completely, a Brahmana is one who knows Brahman. Their discerning capacity takes them to that position. And to know Brahman means to know the source of Brahman, to know Parabrahman. It means a mature stage of a Brahmana is a Vaishnav. So guess what? We're trying to become Vaishnavas. We're better than Brahmins. So, you know, one can think, you know, foolishly like that. But the fact is, the gift that's being given is that, the unqualified personalities. Just like the discussion, in one of the evening programs, I won't make mention, but persons that are born in Brahmin families, that's a very prestigious situation. However, in this age of Kali, the fullness of that prestige and qualification is not available for many reasons. Just a little sharing. I don't know, 25 years ago or something like that, I was at University of Texas in Austin with a book table. And I don't know if they allow it today, but then it was allowed. I had 2 6-foot tables with dioramas and books, and like it was really fantastic, because at least at that time, I don't know what it is today, but all the students had to go to the student center to get their mail, because that's where their mailboxes were. You know, anyway, it wasn't a big, you know, the internet getting your email, but it wasn't so popular then. So everyone, it was like a really good spot. So I was meeting many, 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 many students, and one of those groups of students that came was a group of South Indian students. And so they invited me, when you're done with the day, would you like to come and have some discussion? Have some talk on Bhagavad Gita, blah, blah, blah. So they said, sure. So I'm in the passenger seat, and there's the driver, and then there's four Indian graduate students from South India in the car. So shortly after I get in the car, the question came, why do you say that in this age of Kali, everyone is born lower than Sudra? And, I asked, are you saying that because you're born in Brahmin families? And they, it was one voice, it was yes. So, they were very direct. So I was very direct. I said, being born in a Brahmin family, you know that one of the essential requirements is the observance of sanskaras, and without the observance of sanskaras, you can't be considered a proper Brahmin. They said, yes, that's correct. So I said, what about the sanskara number one? Out of the sanskaras, the first one is Garbhadang sanskara. And who observes that? They looked at each other in the car, including the driver, looked in the back seat and said, you're right. Etc. So purification is not just birth. Purification is many things. And sanskaras is one of those purifications. It's a ritual. But rituals need to be observed by those who are Brahmins. One of their functions in society is to guide people in the performance. But they have to be qualified to do that. And it's not just good intelligence and and all the things that go with being a qualified Brahmin. Being a Brahmin. So again, it's ultimately understanding Brahman, and understanding Brahman implies, in its mature stage, Parabrahman, becoming Vaishnav. That's the mature stage. So there are Vaishnavas, but that are born in Brahman families. There's Vaishnavas not born in Brahman families, and the exaltedness is the bhakti that one has. And that's one of the things that we heard, just repeating again because it was nice. There's this whole series of verses with different parts in the 10th canto and other places besides the 10th canto that say, this is like this benefit of Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. More dear to me than Brahma, Shiva, even the goddess of fortune, even my very self is you, Uddhava. So the commentary explains, it's not that there's anything, diminutive about Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva or the goddess of fortune, but the remark goes specifically to the quality of bhakti. And it's the quality of bhakti that's superlative, not this, that, or the other thing, or the other thing. What attracts Krishna, what controls Krishna is bhakti, not the bhakta. It's the bhakti within that bhakti, bhakta. So it's not what position you have in society by birth or by anything. It's the bhakti that one has. And that's the message. And that's the superlative position of the gopis. Because even Uddhava was so exalted, Uddhava is looking to the gopis as the most exalted, wishing to have the dust from their feet. It's a very different picture of you know, success, the picture of success, minus the spiritual picture. We all know what that one is. And this is a very different picture. And it's not easy to assimilate this different picture. It's the path that we're on. But, you know, the obstacle is the mind that's attached to this other picture of what's success, of what's kindness from Krishna, like our discussion yesterday or the other day about Krishna's kindness, and some difficulty comes. And how to see Krishna's kindness within everything. Not easy. Even for devotees. There's a family, brother, two brothers, they're both initiated devotees. Their father is in India, and he was having like severe medical problems. And there was this whole thing about, this is really recent, the whole thing about going to see him, and would it be possible? And there's no air, and would they have to be self-quarantined for 2 weeks after arriving? And what's the rule? And the government allows, if you're going for medical emergency, you can don't have to self-quarantine, and then and on and on and on. And then, you know, in, how is this merciful? How is Krishna merciful? And then news just came, while in the hospital, he tested negative for coronavirus, and now he has coronavirus. He had to be taken out of that hospital, put in, and he already has breathing problems, you know, almost for certain, finished. Because one, it's a respiratory, the COVID thing is a respiratory attack, and you can't breathe. So, they're crying. I mean, not, I don't know, literally, maybe literally also. But, you know, and that's just one. What to speak of the, whatever that number is in America or in the world, how many people. And then all the other things that happen that are just tragic. Krishna is merciful. Like this discussion we've been had a few times. Why creation? Why not just keep everybody in the spiritual world? Because here there's dukkhalayam ashashvatam by design. How's that kindness? Where's the kindness? And so forth. So we don't need to go there. We've done it a few times. Krishna's nature is he's very kind. He wants us and is giving us this path, opportunity to return to him. Purnar janma na, and mamiti, come to me. He's rolling out the red carpet. And, you know, it's a struggle. And the struggle is the mind. We're attached to the temporary and being in the joy of the temporary, and happiness is supposed to look like this and it's not supposed to look like that. So I'm feeling distressed because it doesn't look like this. How do we go beyond the mind? Or cleanse and purify the mind? Well, you can be Shankachuda and get chopped by Krishna and then lose your mind. That's one option. That's not a preferred one, though. Preferred one is what we're doing. And it takes faith to go down that path, but what are our options? And as consciousness becomes elevated, the notion of happiness out there in the temporary, it starts to fade. It isn't really a happiness out there in the temporary. And as that light goes on, then we, the Vaishnavas, can be of ultimate benefit and compassion to others in the world who are struggling very hard with the six senses, starting with the mind. We have to know how to administer compassion properly, but we have to be situated as recipients of Krishna's compassion in order to give it. It's a gradual process. Someone wrote to me the other day saying, you said it's a gradual process, 15, 20 years ago when I started, and I was thinking, I'm going to do it quickly. And now I understand it's a gradual process. And I'm making a renewed commitment to the bhakti process with full acceptance that it's a gradual process. And it's not discouraging, it's enlivening. Because thinking it's, you know, I'm going to do it quickly, acting in false ego, I had another experience. So the reality light has gone on, and it's a gradual process. So here we are, engaged in a gradual process that's meant to take us to Vrindavan, Krishna's eternal abode. And it's a gradual process. We have to follow the process internally and externally properly. And this hearing and chanting is at the essence of the path that we're following. Let's see if there's some discussion. Speaking about current events, it seems to be, you got to do that, given the circumstances we're in. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, on this point of you were sharing your interaction with the South Indian students, when we are reaching some new people and introducing them to Krishna consciousness, particularly when they're already, I mean, not really following, but they have some connection with other spiritual processes.
Fine.
And they have a strong feeling of attachment.
Fine.
Or like that's, so when they share that thing to the other group people and other people also get influenced, how do we have to?
Everything depends on time, place, circumstance. It requires intelligence that comes from super soul to know what's appropriate. I don't say that in all circumstances. But, the circumstance lent itself. These are, cerebral guys. They weren't proud. They were asking. They were asking directly, because it's people that are proud don't invite you to come to their home and just have a discussion on Bhagavad Gita. They want to do something else. And, the mood, so it all depends on, take the model that suits the circumstance. A strategy that Bhakti Siddhanta used is a very practical strategy. When he was asked to address this question, which is Vaishnava that may not be born in a Brahmin family or a Brahmin, which is superior. So the first, for a whole day, verse after verse after verse after verse of describing the exalted nature of the Brahmana. So the Brahmins were going, wow, this guy's got it. We're with him. And it was sowing his scholarship, the authority of the Vedas, and honoring the Brahmanas. And then the next day was, you know, a U-turn. It wasn't exactly U-turn. The culmination of a Brahmana is a Vaishnava. And here's the exaltedness of a Vaishnava in verse after verse after verse after verse after verse. And at the end, he received a standing ovation from both groups. That's pretty rare. So it depends. And, you know, at one principle is you just encourage them to do what they're doing. Encourage them to do what they're doing. And then find out what it is that they can appreciate and encourage them to do that which they appreciate. That Vaishnavas do. Or even specifically Gaudiya Vaishnavas do. But just that Vaishnavas do. You know, one of the things is eating habits. I give an example. One time I was visiting, became a regular visitor for a Sri Vaishnava Brahmin doctor. And he had started reviving his bhakti practices, Sri Vaishnava practices, because of association with devotees. Like many young men, when he went to college, he was just absorbed in college. And to become a doctor is like intense. So he just, all of his youthful training was to the side. And then now he's a practicing doctor and he met devotees. And he purchased a Srimad Bhagavatam set and read it cover to cover. And then he started reviving again his practices. You know, with mantras and shilas and, you know, doing his puja and with so forth and so on. And I noticed that he just offered rice. So I, you know, not in a confrontational, but in a conversational way, asked him, you know, our practice is we offer everything, not just rice. So what's your thought about that? He said, you're right. But I'm following the practice. That, you know, this is the way it's done in our tradition. No further discussion. Now, I don't know what he does today, but, you know, it was not confrontational and gentle. And he was appreciating Yad Karoshi, Yad is, you know, you offer everything to Krishna. And then the verse, and when you take, then it's, so we didn't get into it, but he understood the principle. Now, as I recall the conversation, he was saying, aside from the puja, maybe we should have a place where we offer everything. Anyway, I don't know what happened after that. I didn't get into it. But it depends on the relationship and the person and what you say. Encourage them in what they're doing. That follow their tradition. The real thing is love of God being awakened.
Hare Krishna. So, when I go in front of deities, I try to observe, little details. I mean, like, but for me, it's very difficult to remember even the color of dress that the deity wears. Wears after.
It's some difficult time. To remember what?
Even the color of the dress that deity wears after some time. It's very difficult for me to keep that in my frame of mind. So.
Uh-huh.
I was trying for many, months or so, but still it's difficult, so I don't know what to do, how to.
Well, it's not imperative that you remember the color of the dress. But if that, in something like this, it's one way that works, because I've seen that, I know of devotees that do this. When they take prasadam together, they talk about how the deity was dressed. This is like in temples. What was the crown? Where were the flowers? Which types of flowers? Etc., etc. So what they're doing is they're bringing to their mind the picture of the deity. So the next day and the next day and the next day, they're taking a picture of the deity in their mind. So it's just a practice, one of many that can help. Or, you know, take a photo and then look at the photo. I mean, what's essential for you as a worshiper of the deity is not those details. It's nice. It's devotional. And then it lends itself to then further thinking, oh, maybe next time we can make such and such kind of dress. And so it just, you know, leads to something. It's more than a regulative. It leads to something spontaneous. And then for a festival, let's do these things. But it, you know, Kali Yuga. We'll have good memories. Okay.
Another question. The Krishna's flute. Krishna's flute.
Okay.
I don't know if I ever heard. I mean, when is what? At what age on the Satkali pastimes he started playing flute?
At what age did he start?
Yeah.
According to Gopal Champu, is when he started herding calves, which was something like 3 years, 3 months, or 4 months, something like that. That's when he got his first flute. Anything else in the room? Okay. Online?
There are two questions related from Megha Mataji from Naperville. One is, even though I love Krishna and I try to share that with family, they're not able to appreciate or develop love. What to do
don't have an expectation, just share your love. That's more contagious than having an expectation that isn't met, because then you'll feel something that's not a pleasant emotion and they'll sense it. So without expectation. And, you know, go ahead.
The second question is, despite knowing the reality that good association is important, they still choose to be stuck in the middle where there's good, but still cannot let go of the bad association despite knowing. Why is this like this?
Why is it like that?
Yeah.
That's the question. Well, conditioned souls, that's why it's like that. We're attached to the impermanent. And the impermanent in the unhealthy state is another attachment. You know, why is it people have addiction? They're just habituated. They can't let go of that addiction. They're just habituated. So we're habituated to a certain quality of life, and the association helps nourish that quality. And so we're just conditioned by the modes of nature. That's why.
How to help such family members?
I thought she's talking about herself. You be good association, and don't be judgmental. Go ahead.
This is from Kirti Prabhu. He has two questions. In the material world, anticipation for sense enjoyment feels better than the actual enjoyment. Why is this so? And how is this different from the spiritual enjoyment in separation from the Lord?
Well, there's reality and there's illusion. And illusion says enjoyment is out there. And the reality is enjoyment's not out there. So that's why the anticipation of enjoyment looks like enjoyment. It's not the same as what the experience is. It's the illusory potency. And spiritual enjoyment is connecting with reality. That is, being in service to Krishna is the essence of enjoyment. And so if one is anticipating the kindness of Krishna and reciprocating with Krishna's devotee, then it's enjoyment. Even if it looks like, oh, I got disappointed. I wanted my father, who's having a medical problem, to get out of the hospital. And it didn't work out like that, so now I'm disappointed because Krishna didn't work according to my plan. But our plan is not what reality is. Go ahead.
Kirti Prabhu's second question is, I have heard Krishna has three different flutes, Vamsi, Venu, and Murali. Is this true? Can you share any details about these and their purpose?
No. You can read in Nectar Devotion and research on your own. I'm not going to speak on that topic. I'm not an expert about Krishna's flute.
Uttama Bhakta Prabhu's question is, one of the qualities that make gopis stand out among other rasas, their ability to overcome social convention for Krishna?
Yes. Could you fix the blind? Keep going.
The second question is the secret of being equipoised during difficult times to remain equipoised during good times?
Well, that's not a secret. If one thing is, if equipoise is there, it's equal in both circumstances. So the secret is being connected to Sat. And if you're connected to Sat, then you're indifferent or equipoised towards Asat, this side or that side of duality. It's necessary to be connected to what's eternal to be indifferent to the temporary or equipoised.
This is a question from Arna, Sanjay Prabhu and Ankita Mataji's daughter. I heard that Radharani is Krishna himself and all gopis are Radharani's expansions. So why are they feeling separation from Krishna if they are Krishna themselves?
Well, Radharani is not Krishna himself. Radharani is the Hladini potency of Krishna himself. So, yes, it is correct. The potency and the possessor of the potency have a quality of oneness. And it's also correct that the potency and the possessor of potency have a difference. So there are two entities, the possessor of potency and the potent. And in one sense, it's one entity, but it's two entities, simultaneous, one and different. So the feeling of separation is part of the completeness of Krishna and his potencies. Everything is there within Krishna. Meeting and separation are both within Krishna.
This is from Visalaksha Prabhu. There is always slackness to understand and realize more deeply the temporariness of this material world. So how to remain in the mode of goodness practices of the bhakti process?
Well, you follow the scripture that says the mode of goodness is like this and you cultivate it and then you're situated there.
This is from Balaram Prasad Prabhu. Feeling of separation from Krishna is ecstasy and the feeling of separation from a family member is painful. Why is it painful with a family member? Is that because of attachment?
It's because of the material conception. It's not just family member. Let's just say when Srila Prabhupada departed. On the one hand and on the other hand. On the one hand, we knew that he went to Krishna, so we should be happy for him. On the other hand, this is not a material attachment, but a spiritual attachment to his association, his guidance, his everything, his physical presence, meant his spiritual presence in our lives, perceivably. So there was enormous sadness. That's not a family member, but it's a spiritual relationship. So a family member, quite likely, the conception is a mix between spiritual and material. And if it's a fully spiritual relationship, then the sadness can still be there, like the sadness of the departure of Srila Prabhupada for his disciples and those that loved him, even they weren't his disciples. So, you know, everything has to do with consciousness. And where is consciousness reposed? Is consciousness reposed in matter? Or is consciousness reposed in spirit? Or a combination? So the sadness of the departure of a family member commonly is the combination. A spiritual sadness because the soul is no longer there, and a material sadness because the body is no longer there. And it's not feeling ecstasy. But, you know, ask the gopis, are you feeling ecstasy? They're feeling separation, which to them feels sadness. And because of the degree of their absorption, Krishna was enacting his pastimes within their heart and in their voices and in their exchanges with one another. It's said by our acharyas, they could see Krishna. Even he was absent. Their intent, their absorption in Krishna was so strong. So if they could see Krishna, why were they feeling separation? It's just the nature of transcendental emotion. It's a whole other world.
Balram Prasad Prabhu had a little bit further. It's painful with a family member and not really with Krishna. So in other sense, we don't have that much attachment to Krishna. So how to process this?
Well, you've answered your own question. We process it by understanding where we are. We're less attached to Krishna than we could be, should be, want to be. And so we're in that mixed position.
This is Sarah Mataji. Is it selfish to want to focus on our own bhakti and our own Krishna consciousness before assisting and helping someone else?
Well, yeah, it depends. Yes and no. You can't give help to others if you don't have the resource to give help to others. At the same time, the degree to which there's bhakti, you want to extend it to others. So it's not, you know, taking the model of what this person is asking. You know, do you wait till it comes to a 5 or a 7 or a 9 before you extend to others? Does it have to get to a 10 before you can extend to others? Or can it happen right from the very beginning? And the way our founder Acharya has trained us is it helps us develop our attachment to Krishna and our bhakti for Krishna by extending what we've been given to others. The Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestows Lord Chaitanya's mercy upon those who assist him, whatever their position is. So, yes and no. And I'd like to end. Do we have more? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.